schwab.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Laura. Coming up today, we're going to meet another of the Tampa mayoral candidates. Harry Cohen will be live with us for the first part of today's program. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we were talking about the dispute over the U.S. border with Mexico and the fact that some civilians in Mexico had been shot by U.S. Border Patrol agents. Here's what two listeners had to say following yesterday's show.
From Brandon, today's immigration discussion, but I was just wondering, but it seems to be a fair comment to make to a lot of the people that are so anti-immigration, so patriotic nationalist, which is kind of hypocritical. But anyway, what about ancestors of people like myself and many others who arrived in, say, from Italy or Ireland in the early 1900s on Ellis Island? Weren't they just as illegal as today's asylum seekers from Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador? Is there a difference? You know, they just arrived on the shores in Ellis Island. I'm not sure there is a difference. Weren't they just asylum seekers also?
This is Dave in Tampa, and the thing that jumps out at me in all of these conversations is that there seems to be a lack of discussion of what I regard as the core issue or issues in all of this, which is the criminality, government corruption, and environmental degradation in Central America that's causing so many people to want to get out of there in the first place. And, you know, rather than talk about the border as much or consider that a solution, I think it's a symptom, and the solution lies in addressing those causal problems that make people want to leave in the first place. I think if we discuss that a little bit more and maybe thought about regional solutions, that problem, the problem of migration to this country, to the extent that it is a problem, would be largely solved.
There you have some listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Well, our first guest today is Harry Cohen. He's a member of the Tampa City Council. He was born in Tampa in 1970. He's dedicated his life to a career in public service. He's an attorney. Cohen served as the chief deputy clerk of the Circuit Court of Hillsborough County from 2005 to 2011. He was elected to the Tampa City Council in 2011 and reelected in 2015. His district includes South Tampa. Cohen is running for mayor of Tampa in the March 5th election this year. And Harry Cohen, welcome to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Rob, thank you for having me. It's good to be with you.
So why do you want to be the mayor of Tampa?
Oh, I think we are really at a great point in Tampa's trajectory and in Tampa's in Tampa's growth. And after spending 8 years on the council, I really feel like I know what we need to do to handle some of the big challenges that we're facing as a community. I think there are probably 500 to 700,000 people that are going to move to this region in the next 20 years. And what I hear people talking about constantly is, how are we going to manage this? How are we going to manage the congestion? How are we going to manage the housing? How are we going to educate the population? And I think most important, how are we really going to build our infrastructure, our flooding infrastructure and our transportation infrastructure, to better deal with what we know is around the corner?
Well, let's talk about transportation first, because you put out a paper on transportation and your ideas about solving the problem. I think people who are driving to work in the morning and coming home at night are just up to their neck. They dislike the traffic jams that we're in. What are your ideas about solving the transportation problem?
Well, first of all, I think the fact that the 1% sales tax, 30-year sales tax for transportation, passed so definitively. It passed in every single precinct in the city of Tampa. And I was very strongly in favor of it, because what you realize when you're someone like me that sits on the council and on the MPO, which is our regional transportation planning board, is that we have, you know, just in the city alone, about $40 million worth of work to do every year just to maintain our current system. And we're only spending like $6 to $8 million a year to do it. So every year we're really falling behind where we need to be to keep up with the growth that I was talking about earlier. The real issue now, we're going to have the resources to do something about this. So the question is, what are we going to do? And what are the principles that we're going to apply to making the decisions about what we ought to prioritize? I have released, as you said, a very comprehensive 4-page transportation plan. It is on my website, which is harry2019.com. And what you will find in there, before we even get to specific projects, is a series of principles, things that I, as mayor, will look at and say, okay, these are the values, these are the things that are most important for us to tackle first. And I would say that safety is our number one priority. We are the most dangerous, or the second most dangerous, depending on what year it is, major city in America for bicycle and pedestrian fatalities. That is totally unacceptable and should be totally outrageous to anybody in this community. So my first priority is to use this money to make very necessary safety improvements all over the city. More sidewalks, better signalization of intersections, crosswalk improvements, lighting improvements, repaving on a 25-year schedule rather than a 75-year schedule. These are things that are going to make a real difference. The second thing I would say is that within the safety category, children on their way to school have to be our number one priority. When we look to see what sidewalks and crosswalks we're going to build first, that to me is the number one question. We are now in a state, unfortunately, that is saying that if you live within 2 miles of a school, you are no longer eligible for busing. So an awful lot more kids are walking, and they are walking on inadequate sidewalks and inadequate streets, and we have got to address it, and we have to address it fast.
Is there a road where you think the danger to pedestrians is so big that it would be your number one priority?
I would say that Fowler, Bush, Hillsborough Avenue, all of them, they're all totally unacceptable in the particular sense of how long you would have to walk in order to find an actual safe place to cross. One of my big priorities as a councilman in my district has been to create safer streets and safer passageways within individual neighborhoods. We've done it on Swan and Hyde Park. We've done it on Himes. It's been done on Nebraska, where we went from 4 lanes to having some turn lanes and some islands. It can be done. It's been done on Bayshore. We've made a lot of major safety improvements on Bayshore. But you got to do it.
What about mass transit? For instance, can you envision trains coming to the city of Tampa under your watch as mayor?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, first of all, the Brightline Virgin train concept that is being fleshed out right now to bring high-speed rail from Orlando to Tampa is very, very exciting. In my view, it's better late than never. I was very, very disappointed that this didn't happen 10 years ago, but I'm very, very happy to see that it's going to happen today. And what I think is really crucial about that project is that if that terminates at a place where a person could then get out and get on to a new expanded, modernized streetcar that goes up through downtown and into Tampa Heights, now you have access to all the downtown and Channelside and Ybor City amenities without having to have a car, particularly places like the Performing Arts Center, where we know parking is really a serious issue. In terms of the rest of the city, I think that the CSX tracks, particularly going from downtown to through South Tampa to Port Tampa City, offer an excellent opportunity to get some cars off the road. There's only two or three trains a week now on that spur. There's a huge amount of right-of-way that's owned by the Expressway Authority and CSX that could be used not only for rail, for commuter rail, but for pedestrian and bicycle amenities. Be a great way to give bicyclists and pedestrians access to something like the Pinellas Trail that would allow them maybe to choose not to be on streets where there's lots of cars. So I think we could also do something with the CSX tracks going north from downtown through East Tampa to USF. Mm-hmm. And then if you bring all these things together at a downtown central station, you have a connection to the airport, now you've got a real system. And now you've got something you can add on to and get federal dollars to add on and take people to other parts of the region.
Harry Cohen is running for mayor of Tampa. He's one of several candidates who will be on the ballot on March 5th. And you're listening to a live interview on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. What do you think about Commissioner Hagan's lawsuit against the transportation tax in Hillsborough County?
I think Commissioner White's lawsuit.
Oh, Commissioner
correct.
White. Yeah. I'm sorry. Right. I'm sorry, Commissioner Hagan. If you
I was very disappointed in it. I think that the voters spoke very clearly about what they wanted, and I think that any attempt to delay or somehow stop this from taking place is very counterproductive. And I will say specifically, from the point of view of the city of Tampa, I just do not understand how anybody who is running for mayor could not be 100% for this program. Because if you understand how critical the city's needs are and that the revenue stream just was not there to support making major changes, I think that it's critical that we move forward with this and that we resolve this as quickly as possible.
You think, what do you think about global warming and sea level rise, and how bad of a problem is that going to create for the city of Tampa in the coming years?
Well, I think it's a huge challenge for us. And I think that with that, like anything else in life, when you have a big challenge, the thing to do is to look it squarely in the face and take it on. You know, I'm reminded of FDR during World War II. He saw the challenge, he saw the threat, and he did something about it, and he mobilized the country to do something about it. And we are in the position to do something about this. We can make changes in the way that we live that will accommodate this threat. From my point of view, the biggest part of the threat, obviously, is the threat of flooding, the threat of storm surge, and the threat that normal afternoon rainstorms, normal weather events, particularly during the summer, will be much stronger and much more destructive and much more frequent. We saw a few years ago, after some pretty routine summer rain, that our stormwater system was really totally inadequate to deal with the flooding. We saw people getting water in their houses that hadn't had it in years. We saw cars marooned on the side of the road, even police cars. And I think that we were very proactive on city council. I actually was the one that introduced the bill to make a $250 million capital investment in major and minor projects throughout the city of Tampa to deal with some of these flooding threats. We also passed an ordinance to, in some cases, double and triple the amount of maintenance of our that we're doing on our current system. And the combination of those two things, I think, have made a real difference and have helped, but I want to be very clear that we're nowhere near where we need to be. Dealing with the flooding that we've all lived with for many years, and that was clearly getting worse, is the first step, but we're going to have to do a lot more in terms of hardening our infrastructure, in terms of making changes to our land development code and changes of what we require of new development in order to take this very seriously. And if you look at what's happened in Miami-Dade, where the water table is rising, what you're seeing is investors are really now starting to take note of this. And even Moody's, the bond rating agency, has taken note of this and has said publicly, hey, cities and municipalities that are low-lying, have a propensity to flooding, the investors and the bond rating agencies want to see that you're being proactive and that you're taking the steps necessary to do what you can to ameliorate these things.
So you think we can harden all the neighborhoods? Let's say, you know, the Water Street development that's going up in downtown Tampa, that can be hardened through infrastructure so that it's not going to flood except in an extraordinary instance. MacDill Air Force Base, south of Gandy, Davis Island, you think they can all be hardened to protect themselves against
global I certainly warming? Think they can be improved. I am not going to ever tell everybody that we're going to be able to solve this problem 100%, but we ought to try to do everything we possibly can, because a major part of our tax base is in low-lying areas. And just two real important things to remember about this. The first is that in 2015, there was a study that showed which cities in America are the most vulnerable to storm surge. Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay region, was number one. We were ahead of New Orleans, Miami, Houston, and New York City. all cities that have seen significant weather events lead to massive flooding in recent years. That's number one. And number two, I saw a statistic the other day that said that 50% of our country's military installations are right at sea level, right on the water. And that means that in the future, when there are base closing commissions, they are going to be looking at this, and they're going to be looking to see that communities that are co-located near military installations are making the necessary investments in infrastructure around those installations to protect them. And I'm glad to tell you that we are making a $90 million investment in the city of Florida, of Tampa. It is part of the stormwater program I was talking about earlier. We are going to be rebuilding the stormwater system between Euclid Avenue and MacDill Air Force Base over the course of the next 10 years. And that is a major investment in MacDill, and it's a major investment in our own infrastructure and tax base.
Let's switch gears for just a second. Affordable housing, though. The housing prices in South Tampa are skyrocketing, and that's pushing a lot of low and moderate income people northward and eastward into places like Seminole Heights and Sulphur Springs.
Which themselves are becoming much more expensive.
Right. And so for a lot of working class people who make $8 or $9 or $10 an hour, the city of Tampa is becoming less and less affordable when it comes to housing.
Well, this is something that I hear about a lot. And we hear about it in different parts of town in different ways. And I think that there's a couple of things that are sort of exacerbating the problem. One is that from the federal government, we're getting much, much less assistance than we used to even do affordable housing programs. So I think the city's going to have to become much more aggressive in terms of using the properties that we own in the city. And also relaxing our land development code and changing it in order to accommodate new forms of housing. For example, we had a presentation at City Council very recently. It was actually also on my motion to hear about container housing, shipping containers that are retrofitted to become housing. There's a lot of advantages to these types of structures. They're less expensive. They're hardened for storms, so they're resistant to a lot of the natural elements that we're concerned about. And we also heard about tiny houses, about the idea of houses that are below 800 square feet, where you might be able to put a cluster of cottages, for example, on a residential lot. These are things that we need to start experimenting with. We need to take, I think, a much more creative and bold approach to housing solutions. We need to relax parking minimums so that people can afford housing that has access to public transportation. We need to incentivize developing near public transportation. One of the really good things about the transportation referendum, as we build out the bus system's been cut back. It's been anemic in recent years. As it's now expanded, it will give more opportunity for areas to become connected to employment hubs. So I think there's an awful lot that we can do. The fundamental thing, though, we have to keep in mind is that we want people who live here and work here to be able to continue to do so. We don't want to have people who work in the city be unable to afford it and spend all the money that they make commuting from way out. It's not good environmentally, and it's not good for people's finances.
You mentioned city property possibly could be used for housing, city-owned property. Could you name a parcel or an area where the tiny houses or the container houses might go?
Well, the city owns property all over. We own property everywhere. And one of our faults, one of the things that we don't do well is maintain the property that we have. So there really would be a double benefit to getting some of these properties off of our responsibility and onto the tax rolls. And I think that the city needs to partner much more aggressively. We've partnered and put out some RFPs for that have been answered by some rather large builders and some large players in the market. I think we need to get much more micro in our approach and start really offering properties up when individuals are able to meet or when you're just talking about developing one parcel, for example, and seeing how it works and seeing whether or not the concept goes. And the truth is that it would not be limited to any area of the city. What really makes affordable housing work is when you can spread it throughout the entire city so that all neighborhoods share in the benefit of being affordable for families to live in.
Harry Cohen is our guest, and he is on the Tampa City Council right now. He's running for mayor. He'll be on the ballot on March 5th in the city of Tampa, and this is WMNF in Tampa. Do you have a favorite politician in the years? Is there a politician that you admire, maybe a local politician or a state politician or a national politician, somebody that you look up to and you would like to emulate?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that actually I would answer that maybe some would consider an odd choice, but I would say that Lyndon Johnson is my most the political figure who in many ways I look to for some inspiration, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I respect people that are able to get things done. I like when somebody has the skills to take an idea and turn it into a law. And I also like when someone is willing to use their political capital after they've been elected to do something that they know is right and to bring the community along with them. Obviously, with President Johnson, that would be desegregating the country. It would be putting Medicare and Medicaid and the Great Society programs on the books. I'm not insinuating that everything he did worked, and I'm certainly not getting into the Vietnam discussion. But what I am saying is that I look to people that are actually able to accomplish things in the office that they seek. And I think that what really makes my candidacy about that is that is really what my passion is. My passion, when we were doing the stormwater program, I was really at my happiest because I was going around to neighborhoods. I was arguing in favor of it. It first failed on a 4-3 vote. We had to go back and keep at it. We kept at it for a year, and then it passed on a 4-3 vote. And I think it was one of the most significant things that's been done in Tampa in a generation.
Have you read Caro's long biographies?
I have.
I love
the Caro books. Oh yeah, I think that they're phenomenal. I those are not the only books I've read about Johnson, but I think that we're really lucky that we have somebody who has written. I think those are probably the finest presidential biography series that there is about anybody.
Harry Cohen is running for mayor. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Harry is our guest. So let me ask you about the Rays. We don't know if they're going to come back or stick with this idea of trying to move to Ybor City. It looks like that idea is dead. Their big complaint seems to be that local government, local business didn't come up with enough money to help pay for the $900 million stadium. The Rays have said, I think, that they would be willing to pay $150 million or $200 million. What's your take on should the public be involved in subsidizing a professional sports team stadium?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I think that what happened more than anything is going to give us a pause. It's going to give us a chance to regroup a little bit and figure out just how we might keep the Rays in this region. I think the fact that they are going to be staying at Tropicana Field through 2027 means that all this business about who they can and cannot negotiate with really goes away. Their lease will be up and they'll be able to be looking toward a new home. The good news is it's going to be a good 3-4 years, I think, before we reach the point where a final decision has to be made about where they're going to go. That'll give us an opportunity to see what other cities are offering. It will also give us the opportunity to assess our own financial situation at the time that these decisions have to be made. I can tell you that one of the big problems, I think, for making the decision now is that right now the city of Tampa is not in a position to contribute any meaningful amount of money to building a stadium. I think that anyone who looks at the city's budget, it's not a question of whether you want there to be money there. It just simply is not money there for this type of a project. But the area is growing a lot, and a lot is likely to change in the next few years. So while I don't necessarily see the city being the major player, it doesn't mean that the county or other public entities might not be in a position to put up money when a real proposal is on the table. I also think that if other sites in the region start to be talked about, we have to be a little bit more open-minded about working together as a region and not just looking for it to be paid by the venue where it's going to be located. And I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. If I know that the Derby Lane at the foot of the Gandhi Bridge has been talked about in many quarters as a possible site. We've made tremendous transportation improvements on the Pinellas side of that bridge. There are now major improvements underway on the Hillsborough side of the bridge. It's near 275. It's much closer to Tampa. If that emerged as a site, it would not be inappropriate for Hillsborough County and Tampa to participate in trying to make the deal come together, even though it's technically in Pinellas County. I'm just using that as an example. I'm not saying that that's necessarily the site, but I think you could get very creative. If the Ybor City site is still available, you know, down the road, maybe there'll be an opportunity for another crack at that. Maybe there'll be other Tampa sites that are considered. I do think that with the growth we are expecting in this area, this team is going to be more valuable to its owners in Tampa Bay than I think in any of the other markets that they're looking at, because our media market is continuing to grow, and it's going to continue to grow between now and 2027. And I have, you know, real questions of why Major League Baseball would want to leave a region that is growing and that has a media market that is so strong for their product.
Just philosophically, though, you don't have a problem with local governments putting up some money toward the construction of a stadium.
I don't have a problem with local governments putting up money, but I want to be very clear that the city of Tampa does not have the money. I don't have a philosophical problem with what other governments are going to do, but I think it's very important for me to say to the city of Tampa taxpayers that my priority for your dollars is going to be infrastructure, congestion relief, and building out our road and flooding network so that we can handle the influx of people.
Harry Cohen is our guest. He's running for mayor of Tampa. He's one of several candidates who will be on the ballot on March 5th, and this is WMNF in Tampa. Harry, we're down to the last minute or two. I want to ask you, Mayor Bloomberg is over in St. Petersburg today. He's holding a press conference. He's talking about global warming along with Mayor Kreisman, and he's talking about guns. What's your attitude? What are your thoughts about guns and gun violence in the city of Tampa? How would you reduce it?
Well, my feelings about guns really go to the national crisis that I think that we are in. And unfortunately, we have these terrible tragedies that occur on a fairly regular basis now, and we seem to be unable as a country to grapple with doing something about it. I do not discard or take lightly people's calls for more mental health treatment and mental health funding, because I think that's very important, but it shouldn't and can't take away from the fact that ready access to guns and automatic weapons is basically a public health emergency in this country. And it's been very, very frustrating as a local government official for the last 8 years, as this crisis has gotten worse and worse, that under state law, we are just totally preempted from doing something about it. And it has been very, very, it's not just been difficult for me, it's been difficult for all of my colleagues, because we have really found our freedom of speech curtailed because of the state laws that just absolutely forbid us from making laws and regulations.
Tell us more about that. How's your free speech on city council been curtailed?
Well, we have actually been told by the city attorney that if we make certain motions related to restriction of gun ownership in the city of Tampa, that we could be fined $5,000 personally and removed from office. That is not a light threat, and that is not something that I think, you know, unfortunately, it's not something that any of us have wanted to be the test case for. But I can tell you that my attitude on this issue is that we need to do more, and we need to do more at a national level to restrict restrict, particularly, I mean, let's just start with the easy stuff. Let's not allow gun purchases by people on the no-fly list, and let's make sure that the gun show loophole is changed so that people cannot buy firearms through a loophole without a background check, and let's ban these assault weapons and bump stocks that allow a weapon to become an instrument of mass killing. These are very, very simple things that can be done, and by the way, I don't know any hunter that would have any kind of opposition to this type of sensible reform.
But Tallahassee has said that cities can't pass their own gun laws.
Yeah, and it's really a there's been a tremendous assault on local governments under these legislatures in the past couple of years, and it remains to be seen whether or not our current legislature, the one that's coming in, is going to be as hostile to local governments as it has been recently. But I hasten to say it can't get any worse. But it's really been very, very difficult. And that runs the gamut. It runs the gamut not just about guns, but about all sorts of different things that, I think local officials really, the people that you run into at the grocery store every night, those people have their ears to the ground of what's going on in their community. And they're very, very, they're very responsive to people in the community because they see them all the time.
Harry Cohen, if people want to find out more about your campaign, what's the website?
Harry2019.com. And I'm more than happy to talk to anybody, any group, anytime that wants to talk about the future of our city, because we have a great future. We need to make good decisions and we need to be prudent. But we can believe in a better Tampa. And I'm absolutely 100% committed to taking us there.
Harry Cohen, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Mr. Cohen is a member of the Tampa City Council, and he is currently running for mayor. He'll be on the ballot on March 5th. And we'll have more interviews with mayoral candidates in the coming weeks. This is WMNF in Tampa. From Oliver Mitikudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to open up the phone lines in just a moment, take your phone calls, and we can talk about the Tampa mayor's race if you want. I'm going to start by playing something from the national scene. This is Massachusetts Congresswoman Elizabeth Warren. She came out earlier this week and said that she was opening an exploratory campaign for president, not officially announcing she's running for president. When she did this, she issued a 4-minute TV spot. We're going to listen to that TV spot right now, and we want to get your take on this too. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. During the lead-up to the 2016 and the 2012 and the 2008 campaigns, we played a lot of speeches by presidential candidates over the years. During 2016, we turned out we had a lot of speeches by President Trump. We're going to continue to do that as we go to the 2020 election. So here is Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren in her opening statement as she explores the possibility of running for president.
In our country, if you work hard and play by the rules, you ought to be able to take care of yourself and the people you love. That's a fundamental promise of America, a promise that should be true for everyone. Growing up in Oklahoma, that promise came through for me and my family. After my older brothers joined the military and I was still just a kid, my daddy had a heart attack and couldn't work. My mom found a minimum wage job at Sears, and that job saved our house and our family. My daddy ended up as a janitor, but he raised a daughter who got to be a public school teacher, a law professor, and a senator. We got a real opportunity to build something. Working families today face a lot tougher path than my family did. And families of color face a path that is steeper and rockier, a path made even harder by the impact of generations of discrimination. I've spent my career getting to the bottom of why America's promise works for some families, but others who work just as hard slip through the cracks into disaster. And what I've found is terrifying. These aren't cracks that families are falling into, they're traps. America's middle class is under attack. How do we get here? Billionaires and big corporations decided they wanted more of the pie, and they enlisted politicians to cut them a fatter slice. They crippled unions so no one could stop
them. We're going to turn the bull loose.
Dismantled the financial rules meant to keep us safe after the Great Depression, and cut their own taxes so they paid less than their secretaries and janitors.
It's time to write the rules for the middle class.
After Wall Street crashed our economy in 2008, I left the classroom to go to Washington and confront the broken system head on.
Elizabeth Warren, apparently not afraid to tangle with Wall Street.
Elizabeth Warren is heading into the lion's den.
Mrs. Warren goes to Washington.
She did.
We created America's first consumer watchdog to hold the big banks accountable.
A woman who has warned of another meltdown if Washington doesn't straighten up.
I never thought I'd run for office, not in a million years. But when Republican senators tried to sabotage the reforms and run me out of town, I went back to Massachusetts and ran against one of them. And I beat him.
And we are going to turn Washington back to the people.
Today, corruption is poisoning our democracy. Politicians look the other way while big insurance companies deny patients life-saving coverage, while big banks rip off consumers, and while big oil companies destroy this planet. Our government's supposed to work for all of us, but instead, it has become a tool for the wealthy and well-connected. The whole scam is propped up by an echo chamber of fear and hate designed to distract and divide us. People who will do or say anything to hang on to power point the finger at anyone who looks, thinks, prays, or loves differently than they do.
Build that wall.
But this dark path doesn't have to be our future. We can make our democracy work for all of us. We can make our economy work for all of us. We can rebuild America's middle class, but this time we gotta build it for everyone. No matter where you live in America, and no matter where your family came from in the world, you deserve a path to opportunity. Because no matter what our differences, most of us want the same thing. To be able to work hard, play by the same set of rules, and take care of the people we love. That's the America I'm fighting for. And that's why today I'm launching an exploratory committee for president. But the outcome of this election will depend on you. In the last 2 years, millions of people have done more than they ever thought they would to protect the promise of America. And here's what we learned. If we organize together, if we fight together, if we persist together, we can win. We can, and we will.
Well, that's Elizabeth Warren announcing she's opening an exploratory committee for president. She's the Democratic senator from Massachusetts, the junior Democratic senator. She says she wants to rebuild America's middle class. She says America's middle class is under attack. She said that the 1% has done things such as crippled unions, and the rich have taken a bigger share of the pie. She wants to hold Wall Street accountable. She says corruption is poisoning our democracy, and she mentioned insurance companies, big banks, and oil companies. She talked about the echo chamber of fear and hate designed to divide us, pointing at conservative websites and news sources like Fox News. She said we were on a dark path, and as she wants to rebuild America's middle class, she wants to do it for everyone, no matter where people are from or what their gender identity is. All right, so we could talk about that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. David was listening to our interview with City Councilman Harry Cohen, and this is what he writes. He said, thank you so much for bringing Mr. Cohen on your show today. I feel that Florida, Highland, Tampa Avenues, and Nebraska Avenue should have more signalized pedestrian crossings to help with safety, especially now that Seminole Heights and Tampa Heights have become more popular. Also, we need more parking limitations in Seminole Heights and Tampa Heights. Like you see in Ybor and Soho, the new restaurants and bars are great, but people are parking very inconsiderately in both the Tampa Heights and Seminole Heights areas. What does Mr. Cohen think about those ideas? That unfortunately came in too late for us to get it to Mr. Cohen. Anonymous writes, not everyone qualifies for help vouchers, and Anonymous goes on to say there needs to be regulations on landlords so they can't rent slums, and Anonymous says add jobs to do so. People who move far from their work are at risk for increased failure, writes Anonymous. All right, Anonymous, thank you for that. Stu writes this. He said, finally, your guest, a candidate with a concrete plan. I wish him well. Thanks for that. And so those are some of the emails that came in while Harry Cohen was on the air. We're beginning to get some emails about Elizabeth Warren's statement. And let's go to Smitty in Tampa. Smitty, we've got some open phones for a few minutes. So what would you like to say?
Good morning. I also enjoyed Mr. Cohen being on, and you got a bunch more mayors to get on board. I had two distinct items, or maybe three. First thing is, why don't they just reduce the speed limit by 10 miles an hour on every street? I would have asked him that. You know, he brought up about the pedestrians getting run over. Well, '08, I got ran over riding my bicycle. I'm in a wheelchair now. And then a year ago, I get run over again because the lady runs a stop sign. So it's weird in the sense of being a pedestrian or a paraplegic. And then my other thought was, why don't we send a delegation to Green Bay, Wisconsin, figure out how they pay for their stadium, and let those rich people sell stock in their club if they can't afford it. I mean, nothing's worse than having a poor millionaire owning a team. We need billionaires.
All right, Smitty, thanks a lot. Thanks for those suggestions. I'm sorry you were hit twice. That's terrible. Smitty, thanks a lot. You know, Mr. Cohen's not here to say, I think the city of Tampa does have control over city roads and speed limits there. So if it is a city-owned road, the city of Tampa can control the speed limit. If it's a state or county road or indeed a national road, I don't think that the city of Tampa has much control, but I think you're right. You could call, Smitty, you could call your city council person and say, which city road do you think ought to have a reduced speed limit? They've tried to reduce the speeding on Bayshore. I think they reduced the speed limit from 40 to 35. I'm on Bayshore occasionally, and I still see people going over 35 miles an hour. And to your other point, I think the professional teams have gotten wise. The Green Bay Packers, I think, is a publicly owned team. But I think the sports owners have gotten wise, and they won't let any other sports franchise sell shares to the public. They've gotten wise because they know they can make a lot of money themselves. So, Smitty, thanks a lot. Let's go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on WMNF.
Hey, a couple of things, and I'll try to be quick. First, a thought. I was thinking that most Americans probably know more about the person who is on The Voice than they know about the average citizen or average person in Palestine or one of the average persons that's one of the refugees coming up from the South here. So I thought, man, wouldn't it be a great idea if we did a reality show with those people as the focus, and maybe America would see what kind of plight these people are going through, and maybe have a little more sympathy for the situation. The second thought about the splitting America. I was listening to Mark Levin the other day, and I can't remember who he was talking about. He played some clip from a representative making some comments there, questioning a female person in Trump's staff. I think it was the head of Homeland Security. I can't remember. It was some department chair. It was a female. And he just started going off on this Democratic senator, just going how he hates the guy, how he's putrid, how he's all this stuff for being so misogynistic to this woman. But he wasn't even being misogynistic. But the whole point is that every time I listen to Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, they're always spreading hate and they're always spreading fear. And to me, that is what is dividing this country the most.
Well, and John, how often do you listen to the conservative radio stations?
I listen to them in my car, and I try, you know, maybe once or twice a week, depending on what time I'm going. Like, if I'm going to work in the afternoon, I'll listen to Rush Limbaugh when I'm coming back because I get out at 2 o'clock or 1 o'clock, and I listen to Hannity at 3 o'clock. And I probably listen to them maybe once a week, maybe three times a month at the most, because I don't really catch them a lot. But I just like to tune in occasionally there. And it's pretty amazing because I'm not tuning in all the time, but it seems like every time I get on there, they're spreading hate, fear, and discontent. Matter of fact, I heard Rush Limbaugh say to his audience once that his whole purpose since day one from getting on the air was to get his listeners not to vote for a liberal or not to vote for a Democrat. Hmm. Now, how can that be fair and balanced when his whole purpose is to bias liberals and Democrats so his audience does not want to support them?
Yeah, well,
that's
I don't know.
What's dividing this country.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Thanks.
All right,
good to hear from you. You know, John mentioned trying to understand people from the Middle East who might be refugees or people from Central and South America who might be refugees. I have seen a number of great documentaries on both subjects, and I'm not going to list them right now, but there are some great films that are widely available on why people are fleeing from places like Syria or why people are fleeing from Central America. In fact, Juan Gonzalez, who is the co-host of Democracy Now!, has a film out based on a book that he wrote about 6 or 7 years ago about why people flee Central America. And you might look it up. It's a great film. And James Lyles is our phone producer today. You are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And Jack is in Tampa. Hey, Jack.
Hi, yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I enjoyed listening to that. Was it Massachusetts that she's the senator of?
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts.
Elizabeth Warren, yeah. You know, I think that a lot of the laws that she was talking about, of course, I'm not a law professor, but was like the Graham-Rubin and the Glass-Steagall Act and, you know, things that tried to limit monopolies. And some of those laws are just ancient. And I just feel like a lot of our politicians, you know, they're so old. I mean, they're like in their 90s, some of them. They look like it anyway. And that, you know, they're just, their jobs are just based on these archaic laws that we have. And she's just going to get in there and she's just going to spin her wheels trying to change things that, you know, of course, I think she feels that the laws are going to help. But I don't see where the difference from going from a monopoly to now conglomerates that now have more power than they did as monopolies is really, you know, the right direction to go. I don't think that more laws are better. I think less laws might be better.
And Jack, so how would less laws reduce the power that those big corporations like oil companies and banks and insurance companies that she complained about, how would fewer laws rein in their power?
I'm saying that, a comparison would be a co-op where all of the farmers from Florida bring their cotton or their peanuts or their pickles into one spot, then they negotiate on a price, and we all benefit from a lower price. And if one farmer or a group of farmers are producing too much of one item, like peanuts, then they get paid to not grow.
But Jack, I don't think that really answers the question. I mean, you know, Elizabeth Warren is basically saying, for instance, when it comes to insurance companies, they act as gatekeepers when it comes to what health care you have or you can't have. And she says they've got too much power. So by creating a farmer's co-op, that doesn't really influence health insurance companies. Jack, I'm not sure we're even on the right planet, but Jack, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to John in Sarasota. Hey, John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, John. I'm sure I'm the same as a lot of listeners, and, you know, that lady that was the senator, everything, her ideas are great, and it would be awesome for her to implement them and for those things to happen, but how many times have we heard the same old thing, and once they get into office, nothing happens? I mean, it'd be great. It'd be wonderful, but it never happens. And I'm sure a lot of listeners feel the same way. And as far as I want to say about the other listener that listens to a one-sided station, he's worried about listening to a one-sided station. Why is he listening to this one? Thank you.
John, thanks a lot. Well, let's go to Kaylee in Zephyr Hills. Kaylee, you're on MNF. What would you like
Hi,
to say?
Rob. How
Hi.
Are you?
I'm good.
Good. Loved what Elizabeth Warren had to say. And in answer to the guy's question, we have had a Republican Congress that has stonewalled a lot of the Democratic candidates recently. And, you know, that's a big factor. I wanted to just quickly say that on the border wall, I tried calling Chuck Schumer's offices, all of his offices last night, which there are five district offices in New York and his Washington district, and all of his mailboxes were full. So I'm hoping that a lot of people are calling, and I just wanted to encourage people. I did leave a message for Nancy Pelosi.
What did you want to tell Schumer and Pelosi?
I wanted to tell them that the border wall is immoral, it's racist, and I, as a taxpayer, do not want to support it in any shape or form.
I saw Nancy Pelosi on one of the TV shows this morning, and they asked her, would there be any money for a border wall, and she said none.
That's what I heard, and I don't know if you saw, but Trump said yesterday that he didn't know if he could back down on this because he's going to look stupid.
Well, maybe there were other things too that would help make him look stupid.
There might be
one or two other things.
There might be.
Kaylee, thanks a lot.
You betcha.
Thanks. Great to hear from you. I'm going to read some of these emails. Now we had a couple callers cynical about Elizabeth Warren. Here's some people that, at least it appears, they're supporting Warren. Anonymous writes, I like Elizabeth Warren, and I think she can win. She doesn't have the baggage that the Clintons were saddled with, writes Anonymous. And then Doug writes this, we need to rally behind Elizabeth Warren. Bottom line, we need the most progressive and articulate and intelligent and established that isn't too old or arrogant, not from last year's failure. And she even looks like the librarian, nurse, or teacher that people might look up to. But only if we rally behind one candidate early on and stay there, writes Doug. So it is early. There's probably 23 Democrats who are seriously considering running for president, Elizabeth Warren being one of the first to move this far ahead. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's see if more people are writing about the topics. Rick writes this, a reality show. Wow, what a great idea, writes Rick. And DeMarco writes this, as a cause of the worldwide refugee crisis, U.S. foreign policy is second only to Mother Nature. If it's your government's policy to degrade the living conditions and destabilize other countries, you can't tell them to stay home and live in hell, the hell that you helped pay for, writes DeMarco, saying that the U.S. should take responsibility for helping to create the refugee crisis in Central America. It is interesting, isn't it, that the U.S. has been heavily involved in Central America. President Reagan was heavily involved. President Bush was heavily involved. Bush won. And with all their work in Central America, it didn't really make it better in places like Honduras or El Salvador, Guatemala. Even in the 1950s, President Eisenhower, who is a moderate on most things, but he helped fund a revolution or a military uprising against an elected small D Democrat in Guatemala. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115, and we'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Shelley Reback and the Midpoint program coming up next, and Lynn Marvin Dingfelder will be on too. They're going to be talking about organizing your life in the coming year. This is WMNF Tampa.
Will the people want an answer to these cash connections to Russia and their well-to-do? And Donald said I'd be glad to prove there's no connection, but my dog ate my W-2. Well, did he show his returns? No, he did his returns, and his taxes he's still unlearned.
Lost me, Donald.
He may hide forever from the common people. He's the man who hid his returns.
Well, the citizens grew wary of some Russian dealings. Donald said there ain't no link, and I was ready to show you all the proof in my taxes, but my printer ran out of ink.
Well, did he show his returns? No, he hid his returns, and his taxes still unlearning. He may hide forever from the common people. He's the man who hid his returns.
Well, the citizens asked Donald, what's with all the dodging? Is there something you're hiding from us? He said, I've nothing to hide. I'll show you my 1040s, but I think I left them on the bus.
Well, did he show his returns? No, he hid his returns, and his taxes still unlearned.
What you hide?
He may hide forever from